Baseball's general managers gather at their annual meeting. What's at the top of the Red Sox offseason shopping list? A big slugger, perhaps? Our Nick Cafardo is in Orlando. We'll get the latest chatter on who the Red Sox and other teams may be eyeing. Then, a great story. How a puck Bobby Orr hit into the stands became a Vietnam soldier's good luck charm. It's Tuesday, November 14th. I'm Chris Gasper, and this is Season 2. Welcome to Season Ticket, a daily podcast from the Boston Globe Sports Department and WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Well, it's certainly cold in New England, but the hot stove is fired up down in Orlando, Florida. That's where Major League Baseball general managers are this week. They're holding their annual meeting down there. Lots of talking, maybe a little negotiating. Maybe we'll even have some moves. Now, of interest to Red Sox fans is whether the Red Sox and Red Sox president of baseball operations, Dave Dombrowski, can bring in some big names this offseason. Joining us now from Orlando to help break this down is the Globe's Nick Cafardo. Nick joins us via Skype. Nick, thanks for coming on Season Ticket.
Good to be here, Chris.
So the first thing I want to ask you about is the biggest name that's been attached to the Red Sox so far in this nascent offseason, and that is one Giancarlo Stanton, the slugger for the Miami Marlins. He hit 59 home runs last year, led Major League Baseball. There was a report from John Paul Morosi, friend of the Season Ticket podcast, that the Red Sox were one of the teams that had contacted the Miami Marlins about Giancarlo Stanton. Nick, what do you know about the Red Sox and Stanton?
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think the Red Sox interest is that strong. They would rather pursue other things. Stanton obviously can veto any deal. He has complete no trade power, and I'm not sure that Boston would be high on his list of places to go. From what I'm gathering from speaking to people from the Marlins in particular, the Red Sox were not one of the teams that were really strong into this right now.
Yeah, it would be a big investment, obviously, for any team that takes on Stanton, and that includes the Red Sox. He's in the middle of a 13-year, $325 million deal, $295 million left on that deal. He does have an opt-out after the 2020 season. He's a West Coast kid. He's from California. A lot of thoughts he would want to go back there. When you look at it from a Red Sox standpoint, so you've talked to Marlins people. They say the Red Sox aren't that interested. Although Dave Dombrowski does have a history, Nick, of loving stars. And he's even come out and said that he believes in stars. He likes to have stars. When he was with the Detroit Tigers, he traded for Miguel Cabrera, who at the time was the big slugger for the Marlins. They were then the Florida Marlins at the time. He obviously made the big deal last offseason for Chris Sale. So I know you're hearing that the Red Sox aren't really that interested, but wouldn't it fit Dombrowski's MO to go after the biggest slugger in the game?
Yes, it certainly would. And I think that's why the Red Sox have been linked to Stanton. Again, I think it all depends on, you know, how much money the Red Sox want to spend on a slugger for the middle of their order. They definitely need that. There's no question about that. But, the whole Stanton thing is interesting in that the main objective of the Miami Marlins in this situation is to dump the $295 million, you know, and whichever team is willing to take on either the entire contract or most of the contract is the team that's going to get him. It's very interesting. I kind of liken it a little bit to the great deal that was made between the Red Sox and Dodgers in 2012 when Adrian Gonzalez and Crawford and Beckett and all those guys went to the Dodgers, shed about $260 million. And all the Red Sox got back in that deal was a bunch of 4A players that never really panned out. So it's going to be an interesting dynamic to see what the Marlins can get out of this situation. I'm hearing that the Red Sox would rather explore other things like a J.D. Martinez, for instance.
Yeah, that's interesting. And obviously with the Miami Marlins, there's new ownership down there. Yankee great Derek Jeter, part of that ownership group. So they're looking to shed a little bit of salary. And one red flag from a Red Sox perspective on Stanton, the lack of durability. He did play in a career-high 159 games last season, but that's really the outlier for Stanton in his career. In an 8-year career, He's played in more than 125 games just three times. So if you're gonna spend big bucks, Nick, on a big time slugger, you want to make sure he's going to be in the lineup, and that's not really something that Stanton has been able to do consistently throughout the course of his career. And that's one reason you mentioned J.D. Martinez as a free agent. He would be an appealing option to the Red Sox. He's more durable. He's somebody where you wouldn't have to give up anybody off the major league roster or for your farm system to get him. It's just money. He also doesn't have the qualifying offer attached to him, which means you're not going to have to sacrifice a draft pick in the 2018 MLB draft. And Dave Dombrowski has a history with J.D. Martinez going back to the Tigers. He sort of discovered J.D. Martinez after Martinez had been discarded by the Houston Astros. That's a name you hear a lot of, and you mentioned his name. So we have J.D. Martinez, Eric Hosmer, Logan Morrison, Carlos Santana. Out of that group, who do you think's the most likely to end up or land here with the Red Sox?
I really think it's Martinez. I mean, Scott Boras has already floated out that Martinez is a $200 million player. I really don't think it's going to get that high. You know,
Scott
thinks
they're all $200 million players, as you know.
Yeah, exactly.
All of them.
Yeah, you know, we just saw where Justin Upton re-upped for, you know, 5 years at $110 million. And there isn't a big difference between Upton and Martinez. You know, Upton is even, you know, a Gold Glove caliber outfielder. And Martinez's defense is, you know, probably a little below average. So I don't think it's going to get up to $200 million. I would guess that it wouldn't be more than $150 million, maybe even less than that, when all is said and done. So I think Martinez is well within Boston's budget, and I think they'll be very aggressive there. Martinez just had a tremendous, run with the Diamondbacks, who would love to re-sign him, and maybe they will. He's a guy that I think just is the perfect fit for the Red Sox. You know, they need the slugger. He is a slugger, and I can't think of a better option for them than him.
Yeah, it would make a lot of sense. Look, we all know they need a slugger. They need some power. Last year, first year after the retirement of David Ortiz, there was just that power element that was missing from their lineup. They did win 93 games. They won the American League East for the second consecutive season, but they were 27th in Major League Baseball in home runs with 168, which for any Red Sox team playing at Fenway Park, you look at that and you think the Red Sox, 27th out of 30 teams in home runs. So this is the big mandate this offseason to add some pop to that lineup. Now, you mentioned J.D. Martinez coming in. He's an outfielder by trade. He certainly could DH a little bit, but is there anybody off the major league roster that maybe would go if J.D. Martinez came here? I know there were reports that the San Francisco Giants were interested in Jackie Bradley Jr.
Yeah, I mean, you would be able to trade a Jackie Bradley Jr. if you signed Martinez and you wanted Martinez to be your left fielder. So that could definitely take place. Now, the Giants need a center fielder. They're openly looking for that center fielder, which is important for them. So Jackie Bradley Jr. could definitely be in play at that point. But that's the only scenario I see where they would trade one of those outfielders. You know, and obviously you would move Andrew Benintendi to center field in that case. And you would be giving up some defense. I don't think that Benintendi is the caliber of center fielder that Jackie Bradley Jr. is. And you'd be, giving up some defense in left field as well. So you're all of a sudden this all-world defensive outfield would have some cracks in it the following year. But you would be gaining, obviously, that production offensively.
Another option for the Red Sox to augment their team and their lineup is someone who's not even playing in Major League Baseball. He's playing in Japan. He is the next Japanese sensation, Shohei Ohtani. You wrote about him in the Boston Globe today, Nick. Really interesting guy. He's kind of like the Babe Ruth of Japan, at least right now. He is able to hit at a very high level and pitch at a very high level, and he wants to come to the major leagues and do that. Now, this is not going to be a Daisuke Matsuzaka situation for the Red Sox. They don't need $51.1 million to bid and a huge contract to get him. Major League Baseball has changed the rules when it comes to the posting of Japanese players. There's a $20 million posting fee, but there's going to be a lot of teams interested in this guy, and the Red Sox don't have a ton of money in terms of their international signing bonus pool to get this guy. But what would he bring to the Red Sox?
Everybody I've talked to just thinks the world of this guy's talent, both as a pitcher and a hitter, which is just incredible when you think about it. You know, he's a right-handed pitcher. You know, he's about 6'3", and he throws, 95 to 100 miles an hour on his fastball. He's got four pitches that he can throw for strikes, which is like a dream come true. You know, these teams would just love to have him as a pitcher, but he insists on being a hitter. And I've talked to people about him as a hitter. He's a left-handed hitter, and he has this, immense raw power. He could be, a definite home run hitter. He's hit balls as far as 500 feet. How does he fit in with the Red Sox? Well, you could use him as like the sixth starting pitcher where he could give Chris Sale an extra day. You could plug him in that way, or David Price an extra day. You could kind of plug him into the rotation here and there, and then use him as a DH, a few days a week. You'd have to not sign J.D. Martinez or somebody. You'd have to have that space open for him to DH a little bit. He has been, he can play first base. He can play left field, although he hasn't done it in the past couple of years. But I suppose he could do that if he had to. So it's going to be fascinating. I talked to a bunch of people, GMs, who really think it could work, and most of them said it could work for a while. One of the GMs told me that eventually the player himself might just get so mentally exhausted or physically exhausted by doing this, that he would have to stick to one or the other.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. The Red Sox sort of went through that in the past. They had a prospect, Casey Kelly, that wanted to do both things. That obviously didn't really work out. He ended up going straight up to pitching and then was traded later in his career to the San Diego Padres. And then the one thing you mentioned, too, about being sort of a sixth starter, Nick, in Japan, the pitchers pitch once a week, so that would sort of suit him better. We've seen guys come over here, whether it's Hideo Nomo or Daisuke Matsuzaka, Yu Darvish. Sometimes there's a little bit of an adjustment period for these guys coming from Japan, being on a schedule of pitching every 5 days, but Shohei Ohtani, certainly someone we will keep an eye on. All right, Nick, thank you so much for joining us from the general manager's meetings in Orlando. You can find Nick Cafardo, senior baseball writer for the Boston Globe, on Twitter at Nick Cafardo. That's at Nick Cafardo. Nick, thanks for joining us here on Season Ticket.
Thanks, Chris.
Moving on, we would like to take a moment to note the passing of a Red Sox legend. The team announced Tuesday morning that Hall of Fame second baseman Bobby Dorr died at age 99. Dorr was the oldest living Major League Baseball player. You know when you're at Fenway Park and you look up those retired numbers? Dorr's is number one. That was the jersey number he wore during his days with the Red Sox. He was a 9-time All-Star. Despite all of his accomplishments at second base, they would ultimately lead him into the Baseball Hall of Fame. What Dorr was most known for was his modesty. As he told the famous CBS radio series This, I Believe, in the 1950s, his greatest joy on the field came from helping his teammates.
I've found that when I make a good play and take my pitcher off the hook, it's just natural for me to feel better than if I made a flashy play that doesn't do anything except make me look good for the grandstand.
Bobby Dorr played for the Red Sox from 1937 through 1951, with one notable exception. He left baseball in 1945 to serve in the military. In the 1946 World Series against the St. Louis Cardinals, the Red Sox would ultimately lose that World Series, but Dorr was fantastic. He hit .409. After retiring as a player, he was a scout and coach for the Red Sox and the Blue Jays. But in Boston, Bobby Dorr will always be number one. All right, we're going to switch gears here in a moment. We're going to go from number one to hockey's one and only number four. That's Bobby Orr. This is a great story. It's about a Bobby Orr hockey puck and a Vietnam War veteran. You're going to want to hear that. It's next. Welcome back. A quick note, if you like Season Ticket, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Remember, subscribing is the best way to make sure you get the latest episode as soon as it's available. In Boston, you only have to say this number, number four. Even the rhyme is legendary. Number four, Bobby Orr. He is synonymous with the Bruins and synonymous with hockey. Well, we have a story about one of his pucks and what it meant to a soldier in the Vietnam War. Our sports editor, Joe Sullivan, talks with Globe hockey writer Fluto Shinzawa, who wrote about this fascinating story.
Thanks, Chris. And Fluto, you and I talked about this story. Email at the Globe. When we get email, we get hundreds of emails. And sometimes you go through them. Most of them are meaningless. Would you agree, Fluto?
Sure. I try and make it a point, Joe, to try and respond to everyone. Not the real cranks that use swears and bad words and all that. But in general, if a reader has the time to email me, I'll email them back.
See, I get so many, I could bypass a good one accidentally. Sure. But you did not bypass this good one. So tell us what popped into your inbox.
From a reader that I had never encountered before. His name is Sam Kelly. He's from Scarborough, Maine. He had emailed me a story saying he had been to a Vietnam veterans reunion in Florida recently, and he heard a great story about this man named Perry Dotson. Perry was a platoon leader in his platoon. He actually had succeeded Sam. And Perry was telling this great story, as he usually does at these reunions, about this lucky puck that he always carried around in Vietnam. It was from a game in 1969, Bruins against North Stars. Perry is from St. Paul, Minnesota. And we all know what happened in 69. This is the ascent of Orr. This is when he was becoming Bobby Orr. The Bruins would go on to win the Stanley Cup that year. He'd win just about every trophy there ever was made. So Perry's in the stands. He's ready to go off to Vietnam. And all of a sudden, Orr and one of the North Stars players get in a puck battle. Boom. Puck goes flying over the stands into the glass, right into Perry's hands. So Perry, he's off to Vietnam. He knows who Bobby Orr is. Maybe this is going to be a good luck charm for him. So he brings it over to Vietnam. He always carries it in his breast pocket. And the story that he likes to tell is that one time he was ready to head out to the helicopters, checks his pocket, puck's not there. He left it back in his tent. So he gets one of the radio operators say, okay, I need my lucky puck. Otherwise, I'm not going out in the helicopter. So the radio operator goes back, gets the puck. Pilot's wondering, why are we not taking off? And Perry says, well, I need my puck. And says the pilot's from California. Oh, what the heck is a hockey puck? He didn't really understand, but he makes it back, and he enters the stucco business back in Minnesota. So this is a good luck charm for him. He's telling the story. And Sam Kelly, going back to the original story, he hears this and says, wow, this is great. I would love to be able to share this. I would love for Bobby Orr to somehow hear this story. So he runs a Google search. He comes up, he plugs in Boston Bruins and Boston Globe writer. He comes up with my name. And the message comes into my box saying, okay, this is Perry's story. If there's any way that Bobby could hear this story, I'm sure he'd be interested to hear it. So go through the proper channels, and Bobby Orr hears it. And
I want to interrupt you. So the proper channels is a guy named Nate Greenberg.
Yes.
Who he used to be a PR guy and vice president of the Bruins, but really one of the most interesting people in Boston in terms of the sports world. He knows everybody.
Everybody.
And everyone loves Nate, including Fluto and myself. But he also is good friends with Bobby Orr. And Bobby Orr is not an easy person to get a hold of, and rightfully so. His celebrity maintains itself, even in 2017. But Nate can get Bobby Orr.
So, sure.
He got him for this, right?
Yes. To go back to Nate and Bobby's relationship, this goes back to when Nate was working in the public relations staff. And even back then, it was hard for him. He has stories. He'd have to go into the trainer's room and say, Bobby, could you please come out and speak to the media? They would love to speak to you. And Bobby, I want my teammates to get the credit and all that. So
more being humble than irascible.
Of course.
Yeah.
So it wasn't that long afterward I get a response back from Nate via Bobby saying, oh, this is very interesting. Could you please get me this gentleman's contact information? So maybe there's something there. Perry sends me his phone number. I have his email address. Okay, we're in business. A couple of days pass, and then I get the word back from Bobby via Nate. I had a very nice conversation with Perry. This is wow. You know, most people would say, oh, that's a very interesting story. Thanks for sharing. Who would go on to take the next step to actually make the phone call?
Bobby Orr would.
Of course.
Bobby Orr would. And people don't know. He's a wonderful person, and Bob Holder of the Globe did a story a few years ago detailing just the amount of good works that Bobby Orr does, charity work that's notable, but also things like this that are just day by day behind the scenes that no one ever hears about. Tell us about the, did you hear about the phone call between the two?
Yeah, again, it goes back to the human connection that Bobby likes to make. So going back to the story, I said, oh, well, maybe there's something there in terms of the conversation. I email Perry. He calls me back promptly and goes into the story that is now amplified and takes on even greater meaning for him. He was in a grocery store with a couple of his friends. Phone number is restricted that comes up on his phone. I'm wondering, oh, who the heck is this? He's in the stucco business, as noted. He thought it was a sales call. Connection's really bad, so all he can hear is just garbled words, and Perry's annoyed at this point. I can't hear you. Goodbye. hangs up the phone, and that's that. He thought, okay, got rid of the salesman. But to Bobby's credit, he calls back. And to Perry's credit, he answers again, even though it's restricted, and he thinks it's a pesky salesman. This time, the connection's much better. He says he hears his name, and then he hears, hi, this is Bobby Orr. And at first, Perry, oh, this is a prank call. This is my friend Sam Kelly put somebody up to this. But no, it was actually Bobby Orr. They spoke for about 10 minutes. Bobby said, I loved hearing about your story. Thanks for your service. If you ever need anything, please, here's my email. If you need any kind of memorabilia for any kind of charity service, please contact me. And they spoke, and Perry, he can't believe it, right? This is one of his the all-time greatest. He thinks this is the greatest hockey player that ever lived. Tells his son, oh, guess who just called? He's telling everybody, he calls Sam. So a thrill of a lifetime for Perry, but also it shows that Bobby Orr is a person who really understands what kind of value a call like that would mean to a person like Perry, one of his peers, same age, as Bobby is going off on his exploits that year. Perry is doing his business on the other side of the world. It's as serious as it gets, right? So Perry was delighted. Sam Kelly, his friend, his co-veteran, was also delighted. He was happy to hear it. So again, going back to your original point, the email, if that email from Sam doesn't come in to me, then none of this happens. Perry doesn't have his story shared. He never speaks with Bobby Orr on the phone. So and from a writer's perspective, it all fell out of the sky for me, but I was happy that it all did. Hopefully our readers got something out of it.
That's an amazing story, Fluto, and thank you for sharing it and sharing it for the readers of the Globe. Fluto was on Twitter, at GlobeFluto. Fluto, thanks again for joining us.
You got it, Joe.
And let's go back to Chris.
Thank you, Joe and Fluto, for that great story. Bobby Orr never ceases to amaze. Finally, the cheap seats. A Red Sox player authored a perfect game in the World Series. Is that wishful thinking? No, it really happened. Red Sox outfielder Mookie Betts rolled a perfect game in the World Series of Bowling on Sunday. An avid bowler, Betts was competing in a Professional Bowlers Association World Series of Bowling event in Reno, Nevada, when he threw 12 straight strikes to bowl a perfect 300 score. Here's the call, courtesy of the Pro Bowling Association.
Boston Red Sox outfielder Mookie Betts on the precipice of perfection. 300 game for Mookie Betts.
Now, I know you couldn't see it, but as soon as Mookie bowled his last frame, you could tell he knew he had a strike. It was like seeing a batter admire a walk-off home run. Now, in Betts' other line of work, 12 straight strikes definitely would not be a good thing for him at the plate, but here it was perfection. Competing in the PBA World Series for the second time in 3 years, Betts didn't advance past the second round of qualifying despite his perfect game. He actually finished 156th in a 194 bowler field. Betts is still a better baseball player than a bowler, this we know, but the Red Sox will take any perfect game they can get. No Red Sox pitcher has thrown a perfect game on the mound since Cy Young did it in 1904 against the Philadelphia A's. That's right, the A's were in Philadelphia back then, two cities removed from where they are now in Oakland. The Red Sox weren't even known as the Red Sox back then. They were the Boston Americans. So you could say Betts has the first perfect game in Red Sox history. It's just in the wrong sport. That's it for this edition of Season Ticket. Be sure to tell a friend about us and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like us, please leave us a review. I'm Chris Gasper. We'll see you tomorrow.